Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Just bury me in the ocean with my ancestors that jumped from the ships, because they knew death was better than bondage.
That was a scene from Black Panther, one of the highest-grossing superhero movies of all time. The success of Black Panther was kind of a I told you so, because it was just one step forward in efforts to diversify Hollywood. This decade, we also saw Oscars So White, the Me Too movement, and a public call for gender parity and more leadership roles for women. To help us look at the significance of this past decade in Hollywood, we're joined by Pia Sinha-Roy, senior film editor for The Hollywood Reporter. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And Pia, you actually started covering Hollywood in films in 2011, so you've essentially covered this entire decade. When did this conversation about diversity and inclusion really start to take off in this decade?
I think, yes, it's been funny to actually look back now at the beginning of the decade and at the beginning of my career and realize that, you know, conversations around race were not really being had. The very few times I even brought it up would be for films that particularly dealt with it, the topic. But even outside of that, those conversations weren't being had at all. And it was almost taboo to bring it up. But I think when 12 Years a Slave came around and it brought a spotlight into some groundbreaking wins at the Oscars. And then right after that, we had two consecutive years of 20 all-white acting nominees at the Oscars.
It
resulted in that Oscars
so white
hashtag.
Yeah.
That was very powerful because it started to shift the focus and the conversation. You know, when that hashtag called for the boycott of the Oscars, that's a big move. That's a big call. And it forces the industry to sit up for a moment and take notice of the issue.
Are we seeing an outcome from the Oscars So White and some of those other pushes?
I think we are, which is a good sign. What happened was the Oscars So White led the Academy to come out with their own initiative to try and double their membership of minority members and women by 2020. So they are definitely looking to do that. And I think that was an important step, if only because it's had a knock-on effect across major studios, major networks, agencies. Everyone's taking a look internally to see how inclusive they really are amongst their ranks. The only way we're going to achieve any kind of parity for gender and race and all other areas of underrepresented communities is to have those members of those communities in key positions that are decision-making positions in this town. Change, I think, has been coming, and it's been good to see that call to action in 2016 kind of actually set a motion going.
And yet, as the awards season is just getting started, there's already been some critiques over the way films like The Farewell, which is more than 80% in Mandarin, doesn't qualify for Best Film in the Golden Globes. What do we make of this?
I find the discussion around language and how it plays into what is a foreign language film, what is an American film, really fascinating. I think The Farewell director, Lulu Wang, has been very clear that her story is an American story. Mm. It's just that America isn't all white and all English speaking. And I think her film shows that. It shows a woman who is American, a Chinese American woman who goes back to China to be with her ailing grandmother. And obviously, when she's with her family, she's speaking Mandarin. And when she's, you know, outside of that, she's speaking English, just like a lot of us, you know, people who are straddling two cultures do.
Are there rules around this?
So there are rules around this. For the Golden Globes, Best Drama and then the Best Musical Comedy categories, which is kind of their Best Picture prize, but divided into those two genres, they don't permit any films with more than 50% of the dialogue in non-English language. Those films automatically automatically go into the foreign language race. Mm. So The Farewell is in the Golden Globes foreign language race, as is Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, mm-hmm. which is fully in Korean. And this happened as well last year with Roma. So we've had this discussion increase, I think, this year with the Oscars disqualifying Nigeria's official entry, a movie called Lionheart, which is in the English language because Nigeria's official language is English. And so it really stoked a conversation around, was that fair? This is a movie made by Nigerian filmmakers in Nigeria. So why could it not qualify in the international feature film category, which is now the new name for the Academy's foreign language category?
Has there been any answers for that?
There hasn't yet. The Academy is sticking to its rules that any film with, I believe, like the majority dialogue in a non-English language is foreign language. Mm. And so that does apply for many films. But then in the case of Lionheart, that's definitely created some problems because I believe only about 11 minutes of that film is in the non-English language, so therefore it didn't qualify.
Wow. I'm learning a lot on that. Yes, that is really, it's really interesting, and it sounds that these films are really going to push that that rule and that guideline because people are upset over it. Let's talk about something else that was really big this decade, and it really, a tipping point came just last year, the year before last, the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. What has happened since the Me Too movement and Harvey Weinstein and the cases around Harvey Weinstein, now that that has bubbled up to the surface and the public really understands what's happening, have there been any changes in Hollywood?
The result of the Me Too movement in Hollywood was then the Time's Up campaign, which about 300 prominent women and industry figures in Hollywood came together in January 2018 at the Golden Globes to announce a Time's Up campaign, and that they really, it was a fight towards gender parity, racial parity, parity for any underrepresented minority in Hollywood, for them to finally be acknowledged, be represented, and to start getting up into the areas of decision making in this town.
Yeah, and when it comes to leadership roles in Hollywood, we have been seeing over the last few years some great projects that have come from women directors and women producers. Is it just perception or reality? Are we really seeing more women in leadership roles in Hollywood?
I think we are starting to see a significant shift. We have more women in the top positions at studios and networks who are getting to green light projects finally, which is so important. I think we're seeing more people of color rising to the top as well. It's not enough, I will say that, but there's been some initiatives that have been put in place with alongside Time's Up. So there was the 4% challenge launched at Sundance in January, where Tessa Thompson challenged everyone to work with 4% women in the works that they're doing.
Yeah, I have to say though, at the same time, it's a wonderful start. But I think for someone who's not in Hollywood to hear 4% challenge, that means that it was less than 4%.
So basically, the 4% number came from the fact that women had helmed just about 4% of the top films between 2007 and 2018. So that 4% number became a call to action, and it became a challenge to ask people, can you make a difference? And if each of you work with 4% women in your particular projects, how can that then affect a larger change? So, you know, Universal Pictures signed on to take this challenge. MGM voiced their support. So there was support for this. And, you know, given that this just happened, you know, I think we are seeing, I believe this year, Universal, which, you know, encompasses Focus Features and DreamWorks as well, has released 7 and announced 17 more female-driven projects, female-directed projects, which is up from 4 in 2018. Mm. So the change is happening.
Mm-hmm. What do you expect we'll see as we move into the next decade, into 2020? Mm-hmm. It really seems like this conversation around diversity and inclusion is just getting started.
I think so. I think this is just the very beginning of something shifting. You know, we still have an overwhelmingly male-dominated industry, and it's a white male-dominated industry. And I should go further and say it's a white straight male-dominated industry. So when you're looking at that, you realize that the content here is not necessarily reflecting the fabric of America today. And I think that's very important because people want to see themselves. They want to see their stories reflected. I still say to this day, I don't think I've seen my own story really reflected accurately. The audience is out there, you know. And I think one thing that's been really key over the last couple of years with, as you mentioned, Black Panther, Get Out, Crazy Rich Asians, these movies have shown studios and the people in charge that they make money. Yeah. And at the end of the day, if something makes money, you can't ignore it.
That's Pia Sinroy, senior film editor for The Hollywood Reporter. Thank you so much for taking the time, and Happy New Year.
Thank you for having me, and Happy New Year to you as well.